This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now time for the property show on BFM 89.9 with me, Keith Kam. Kuala Lumpur, a city where some 1.6 million people call home, is ever-changing, and we're not just talking about the price of property, which seems to be heading in one direction, up. To keep up with the changing face of the city and its inhabitants' requirements, there needs to be constant study and considerations to allow the authorities to decide on how to adapt. Also, this will allow investors to assess their investment decisions. Today, we will be speaking with Charlie Koh, the CEO of Property Price Tag and the author of The Secret Atlas of Greater Kuala Lumpur. Now, first of all, Charlie, you're an urban planner. Tell us what that means.
Most people in the property market, they understand what a town planner is.
Right.
And then there's a new term. I am from the American schools. So we call them city planners. And urban planner is really a term that we use for anything in an urbanized form. So a town planner in a traditional context does a lot of town planning, zoning. You know, is it residential, commercial, industrial sort of land? They look a lot at planning structure plans, local plans.
Right.
That's a town planner. City planner is slightly different. What we do is we try to expand the study to a little bit more conceptual. We do a lot more economic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Economic studies, supply, demand. We do big data analysis, urban design. Some urban planners are also urban designers, not necessarily town planners. So it's a term that we use to describe a profession that is not so much a town planner, but something a little bit more than that.
You would have to work with authorities on these projects then, in these studies?
Not exactly. So authorities like DBKL, MPPJ,
right.
They have their in-house town planners who does all your local plans, right? So that's one aspect of planning. Then there's the other aspect, which includes your supply and demand. And in Malaysia currently, I think there's not that many people who take the planning side in terms of economics. The economics of property or housing and the stock that is in relation to that. So we do a little bit more on that end.
So now this book, The Secret Atlas of Greater Kuala Lumpur, can you share with us an overview of it?
So the book is a result of a collaboration with Think City.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very, very interesting exercise that I went through. So what we did was we try to look at different sources of data, down from SME businesses but the main source is obviously transaction prices, and try to see how does KL citizens actually behave? What is our culture? What do we like? What we don't like? And our identity actually as a city through the lens of data. So a lot of times when we introduce, you know, what is Kuala Lumpur like? You know, we will tell people, okay, our people like to eat nasi lemak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we like to drive. We have this obsession with our cars. You know, things like that. So we have this description of who we are as a city, right? What does Kuala Lumpur people like? But we are trying to use data to see how exactly do we behave as a collective whole, as a individual people owning homes in Malaysia, how do we behave? So that's what we do, and we look at different quirky topics like how young are your neighbours,
right.
You know, like things like price of interest, including cafe index and public transport myths, you know, if there's a tamachai or like, you know, pinjaman berlesen near your house, what does that mean, you know? So we try to look at different things that you see on a daily basis, and what does that mean to you and your neighbours.
Kind of like what you said, when you mean numbers are the symptoms of our culture.
Correct.
How do you elaborate on that?
So we have so many people in Greater KL, right? We have mm-hmm. 7 million going on 8 million.
That's Greater
soon.
KL, yeah.
Yeah, right. So, exactly. So, how do you... Everybody works on a stroboscope, so which means that, let's say I'm living in Ampang.
Right.
There's quite limited development, construction on Jalan Ampang, yes, but in Jalan in Ampang as a whole, there's not as much development as, for example, in
Downtown KL.
So, for example. So, if you are a person who's living in one space, your view and your experience every day shapes how you think about the city. But we forget that we are actually only one perspective. There is 7 million other people's
yes.
perspective. So how do we gather what people like and what people don't like based on the mass whole. Mm-hmm. And that's how we're looking at the numbers and see how much do they pay. How much do they pay for a home? What do they like? Do they like to live next to a park or not? Do they like to live next to a cemetery or not? So that is sort of how we went about it. And how, even if you say, okay, of course people don't like to stay in a cemetery, it's actually not necessarily true. We found in a very interesting lines of comments that we posted on our site. But there is a negative correlation, about 8%, to homes in 500 meters from a cemetery. But knowing that people actually pay 8% less is quite interesting, like significantly less than other points of interest, is where we are going at.
And we will get into these assumptions a little bit later, but for the time being, who are you trying to reach with the Greater Atlas?
Actually, when we started, we wanted to just look at the data and play with it and see what it tells us. What it tells us about the city, interesting perks. The first thing I wanted, obviously, to showcase is that the capacity of data to investors to mm-hmm. lower down their risk, right? So somebody who's investing, they usually take advice from property consultants, you know, things like that, which is great. You know, they're very experienced. But I do think also that there are certain assumptions that might have been a bit overrated or underrated on how much does it really affect the pricing. And I think knowing that would help property investors, developers, especially when you're looking at supply. You would think that developers are, you know, in a position of power, right? I build a retail mall, and then the previous assumptions from our last 30 years of experience is that I build and they will come, right? But imagine you have 20 developers thinking exactly the same thing, and then building exactly the same mall at exactly the same time. Then we as citizens or we as urban people living in the city are at risk of having these assets. Why? People will say, no, it's a free market, you know. If they oversupply, then we'll let it. It's a free market, supply and demand.
But it presents different social problems.
Eventually. Exactly. And it's a cost, actually, to the rest of us, right? Mm-hmm. Because roads are subsidized, right? Electricity cables and all those infrastructure that is placed in, those are costs. So if it's a failed project, we are all affected.
We do pay taxes after all.
Yeah. So the idea is that, you know, not just for the average Joe that's looking at, oh, do I invest in this property or not, but even like big companies who's looking at their risk portfolio mm-hmm. against a landscape. And that's where we try to communicate the importance of having facts and data to back up some of this decision making.
Tell us what sort of work went into the Greater Atlas book, you know, the amount of time you took, for example. It's a lot of numbers.
Yeah. So Property Price, I have to give you a little bit about what Property Price Act does. We are a data company. We have been publishing transacted data to the general public for free since 2014. What we add to the dimension of that is location. Mm-hmm. Where are these data located on a geographic basis? So the company basically builds robots. Think of it as data being M&Ms. Sorry, I like to use this analogy. M&Ms with many, many different colors.
Yes.
Okay, so from red, pink, ruby red, you know, whatever slight colors. And what we do is we build robots in order to sort the data.
Okay.
So after we sort the data, each bucket gets an analysis. And I have data QCs that basically look at each bucket and making sure that the buckets are largely correct. I can tell you there is no 100% correct data in the world.
No.
Yeah. So we try to keep improving the machine learning of our robots in order to do that. So because we have this database and this algorithm, so the company has 15 staff and 9 robots operating 24-hour basis. So they basically sort the data, and what I do is I plug it. Okay. I plug from the database and then I look at the data. And most of the work is actually with the graphics mm-hmm. in this book. The data part, we pull it out from the database and then we look at the numbers. And then after that, the graphics part was a long time. Like we took, I think, 2 to 3 months, 2.5 months on the graphics and about a month and a half on the data.
So Khazanah National's Think City, they are involved in it as well. Can you elaborate how?
Yes, so we collaborated with Think City. Matt Benson, he's like the data guru. He's the one who's basically given all the perspectives and challenged me into thinking out of the box, because I'm really boring. So I always think like, oh, you know, transacted data, price per square foot, line graphs, you know. And he's like, that's boring, Charlie. Like, go further, you know. And he said, why don't you look at it something quirky, something uncorrelated. Think of something like Dharmacharis, right? Like lotteries.
Does that, cemeteries. Yeah.
Cemeteries, you know, like, how does that affect, you know, house prices? Does it? Maybe it doesn't. Public transport. So you will say, like, okay, plot every station and see if it's next to a housing. And then people will plug, you know, and say, oh, this specific property has gone up by 30%. But that's one data point. So how do you do something that is more accumulated? And then how do you dice it? So in the book, we have effects of incomplete stations and completed stations and how that affects your property price. So that gives a different perspective already.
We are speaking with Charlie Koh, the CEO of Property Price Tag and the author of The Secret Atlas of Greater Kuala Lumpur. In a few moments, we will explore the truth about some popular assumptions about property, like how public transport, schools, cemeteries as well affect prices. BFM 89.9. This is The Property Show on BFM 89.9 with me, Keith Kam. We are talking to Charlie Koh, the author of The Secret Atlas of Greater Kuala Lumpur and the CEO of Property Price Tag. Now, Charlie, talk to us about the big data analytics that went into the Secret Atlas of Greater Kuala Lumpur.
So the main source of data that we use is actually transacted data, specifically in 2015. So there is a lot of data, tens of thousands of data. And what we do is we put them into geographical locations and then dice it up, put it in buckets and then try to analyze different neighbourhoods. You know, KL has actually evolved quite a bit since we started. I mean, incorporation was, what, 1973?
Right.
I think 1st February. And KL itself was divided into five areas. Mukims, they call it. These districts. And then Selangor, a lot more. But would you... Somebody who's in Bangsa will probably not relate to somebody in OUG. Mm-hmm. Two different places. But they could be in the same Mukim.
Right.
Actually, I'm not sure if that's true. But what I'm trying to give a sort of an idea of the scope. The distance, the idea of distance and the idea of scale has changed along the way. So bucketing and how you do analysis is different. So having so many points of data, most people, they don't bother. They don't bother looking at it as a whole. But in today's technology, with today's level of tech, you can. You can do it. And with cloud, Amazon, everything on our server is on a cloud. So the robots work 24 hours. Mm-hmm. It's actually humanly impossible to look at all this data. I have already surrendered the task to the robots, and half the time, actually 89% of the time, they are more correct than I am.
Of course, I would have
an assumption. Mm-hmm. I look at the data, tells me something else, and I'm like, I'm wrong again. And most of the time, obviously, sometimes the algorithm is wrong, but most of the time, the robots are correct.
But the more data you have, the more accurate your assumptions would be, right?
Yes. Well, the more data you have, the less you're at risk for bad data.
Right.
There will be bad data points. There will be anomalies, looking at graphs and things like that. But because you have so much, you can look at medians, you can look at the center and cut off all the outliers and really look at the data in a very... you don't have to be as accurate as you are 30 years ago,
right,
because the human ability to comprehend one point of data is limited, right? If you want to process 40,000 points of data, it's going to take you 5 years and the data is outdated, right? But the robot can. And we need to start using this intelligence in our planning to be more intelligent on how we plan our cities.
Right.
And we need to liberalize this knowledge and not put it under a cap. Because all of us are pregnant when something goes wrong. A new road is constructed with nobody using it. A new mall, you know, or a new housing complex that has one type of housing, you know. And us as citizens need to take care. Municipals needs to know. Instead of looking at a plan and say, okay, it's according to each rule that is already there. This is all according to what is stipulated in the law. Okay, approve. The world works so fast, like we are building so fast that it is important to take notice, I think.
Now, let's discuss some assumptions. Prices per square foot data contained in your book.
Yep.
Does this correlate with the general assumption, like prices in the KLCC area would be higher than, say, somewhere in Bangsa, for example? Are these all in line with the assumptions?
Actually, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. You will find that the highest price per square foot is in the Bukit Damansara area.
Okay.
Yeah. Houses that are limited, probably because of limited stock, things like that. And the way we have zoned it would be different from other analysis because we zone it by postcodes. So basically, what we have found is that it's very sensitive to actually supply and demand, how much supply is actually in the potential of coming in. We looked in this book specifically on home price. So we took out anything to do with offices and retail because we find that that's kind of skews it, right? Because there are different property types. And we also found something very interesting. We found that in most neighborhoods, the median price is about 10% less than the average price. And I was debating this internally for a week in my heart, which numbers to use. And it was very insightful because after talking to some of my staff, it means there is inequality in each neighborhood. That means that because the average is higher, it means that there's polarity. There could be multimodal
different
price
types
trends.
Of housing in
that means
in that,
that
one
there
area.
Could be a low-cost area that is a lot of numbers. So there's a lot of transaction in the lower-cost housing. But there's also very expensive housing in the same area, same neighborhood. I found that very interesting. And that would launch me into investigating further into each of the neighborhoods as multimodal, looking at inequality. Think of Gini coefficients for countries.
Yes.
We can now do it for neighbourhoods.
Taking this a little bit further, with the government's plan to, say, build prima homes in more popular areas, wouldn't this skew the data eventually?
Well, it depends in terms of the conditions. I'm not so familiar with the conditions for each housing types. One of my editors actually wrote an article on this, and she's probably better at this than me. But each of these housings do have conditions, like you can't transfer the house in 5 years or 10 years, depending on which housing. So that would delay, there's a delay effect, right? Because you don't see the transaction on our data. It's not supposed to change hands anyway. There could be tenancy, but tenancy currently is not very diligently recorded. So there could be a supply in the market that we cannot record because of the transaction being delayed by law for 5 to 10 years. There is a lot of supply. I have actually some concerns on the amount of supply and the timing. And I think housing supply is important. It just needs to be understood and timed. But the time element somehow has been missing in our conversation for town planning for ever. We have never talked about timing in terms of putting in. And the risk of timing has been entirely placed on decisions of individual developers or builders. And they don't act in concert. Well, they might act in concert unintentionally, which is kind of the danger.
But for a lot of developers, that motivation is the bottom line at the end of the day.
But it will affect their bottom line, right? Because if three other big developers are building in the same place at the same time, the same product, the risk of oversaturation is there.
Sure.
And all three will be taking that risk together.
And yet we have so many malls.
Yeah. One would argue is because they didn't know how many there was.
Yes. Going back to the topic about Bukit Damansara being one of the most expensive areas, which this also brings me to the other assumption that property on higher elevations fetch a higher price. This is what SimCity taught me.
Exactly. And it's also what we found in the book. So we mapped the height of the elevation and price per square foot. And it looks very similar. The two maps looks very similar, except for big magnets like KLCC skewing, which is actually on the lower plane, and that skews the price per square foot there. But in general, the higher you are above ground, especially in a flooding country, right?
So right.
Higher you are above ground, the more expensive it is. People like to be away from natural disasters.
The assumption about public transport stations being nearby, how did that work out?
Didn't work out quite well. I would personally think that Malaysians would love to be near public transport, but we found some very interesting insights. So we mapped out all the completed and not completed, planned, announced train lines, and we realized that people are actually not that quick in responding to announcements.
Right.
So the Kelana Jaya line actually had an increase in price per square foot, but the ones that are just announced but incomplete don't have that surge in price per square foot. Keep in mind also, we are looking at sub-sale and also things that are stamped. So if the developer is delaying the stamping, then we won't get that data. But we split the data into two, completed stations and incomplete stations, and we found that there's actually a negative correlation to incompleted stations because of the construction period.
The noise related to it.
The noise. And we also do have this not in my backyard attitude, right?
Yes.
I would like to have access to public transport, just not right behind me where everybody will park in front of my house and then walk across the bridge. So that has actually dampened some of the transaction. And we were not picking it such that, like, you know, oh, this specific development connected to the MRT, you know, very high rise, and then, oh, look, it's like 25% above market. We were also looking at landed properties that's next to the stations, so because it's home price in general, mm-hmm. and every data point counts. And we found that not such a great thing next to MRT, for Malaysians anyway. I would love to, but I'm just one data point, apparently.
What about properties that are close to schools, for example? Would people be averse to that?
We didn't look at schools, like primary, secondary schools. I'm curious about Chinese schools, actually, but we didn't do it in this book. We did universities, mm-hmm. colleges, and there is actually a positive rental correlation, but negative transaction correlation, because I think there is wear and tear. So yes. The capital, they could depreciate over time for the homes because of the student tenants and things like that. So you would think that, yes, it's near a university, good rental yield, da-da-da, price would go up. But there could be a depreciation because most developments, especially high-rise, the owner occupancy is a very strong factor in mm-hmm. your value. Mm-hmm. If it's mostly tenants and it's not well cared for, there could be depreciating capital based on that. So we do see that sort of insights in the book.
The findings in your book, is there an expiration date, like when certain things change?
We feel like the book actually investigates more human behavior. So it's a snapshot in time of data, 2015 data, and we looked at how what people prefer. Do they prefer to be next to a cemetery or not? Do they prefer to be next to a park or not? Do they like public transport or not? So I don't think that KL likes evolve that quickly, that next year everybody suddenly likes to be near a cemetery. Highly unlikely, I think. Mm-hmm. So it snapshots how we behave as citizens of the city. So that part, I think there's a very long expiration date. We will change. Humans change, cities change, our behavior will change. But as of now, I think the expiration date is low. If you use the individual data points, like how many percent are you below market price, neighborhood market price, those would change. Those has a shorter lifespan in terms of the data.
What's the take-home message with your book that you would like people to get?
I think the book, as I've spoken to some of my friends who are not in the property line, we found some very interesting insights. Some of them are looking at, for example, I have this thing called a cafe index. And we're looking at income, basically, like a new young generation spending $12 a coffee, sproutings of this. You would think, you know, us, a 50-year-old, and they're like, who goes to these places? And why are there 10 in this street, right? And it's actually a symptom. It's a symptom of an injection of a new generation in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And if you're in Ampang, you should welcome that because Ampang is actually, I suspect, an aging population, like a small micro-aging population in Greater KL. So having an injection of new life is important. And a lot of retailers who's opening, I don't know, dessert shops or gaming shops or even, you know, offices or things like that, you want to know, I want to place my office somewhere near Kopitiam mm-hmm. because, or more choices of Kopitiam because I want my workers to be happy. So the book will actually show you where is the best locations. Maybe in areas that you've never considered before because of your stroboscope view, right? Because, I mean, be frank, I don't know every part of KL. I've never been to some part of KL. Sometimes when I look at land parcels, I don't even know where they are. And get lost. Waste is the one who saves me, right? So there are opportunities that you can find. And I think not just for property people or people interested in property, but even SMEs, I think.
We have been chatting with Charlie Koh, the CEO of Property Price Tag and the author of The Secret Atlas of Greater Kuala Lumpur, which is already available at the major bookstores. Now, before we wrap up, here is a quick property tip. If you're a first-time home buyer, did you know the Malaysian government has schemes for young adults who are relatively new to the workforce? My First Home Scheme, or Scheme Rumah Pertamaku, which allows young adults to obtain up to 100% financing from financial institutions, is one. Then there's Prima, established to plan, develop, construct and maintain affordable lifestyle housing for middle-income households in key urban centres. You can find out more from their respective websites. Now, if you've missed any part of this program, download the BFM app on both Google Play and the App Store. That's all for this week's The Property Show. Join us again next week, Friday, after the 9:30 a.m. news for more. I'm Keith Kam for BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.